And we're back. This is the Knicks Wall Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Cortez. Joining me today, Eli Cullen, Quinn Haynes, and of course, Sean Geddes. Guys, it's been six games since we last spoke. Our boys have hit a bit of a rough patch. 2-4 in their last six. Obviously, we know we've now lost Mitchell Robinson, probably for the season, with a fractured foot. And apparently, we can't score points anymore. Knicks are, over the last six games, they're ranked 26th in the league in points, total points scored, 102 a game, approximately. And we're just hitting the home stretch, 21 games left, so it's kind of go time. So I'll start it off with Sean. Sean, what's been the biggest thing for you during this little bit of a rough patch? Because it's been a good ride till now, but, you know, every team goes through it, but it's obvious something's going on with the offense.
Yeah, it's been a very frustrating thing to have happen. I mean, 1 week we lost three straight, and in that week, we held teams under 100 points and lost the game twice, and I just thought that was disgusting. But I feel like we've been very stagnant, and I hate to, you know, a lot of it, I'm trying to dance around pointing toward Elfrid Payton.
Let's just do it.
Okay, here we go. So in the Minnesota game, he completely tanked the offense in the fourth quarter. Like, it was ridiculous. He had one of the worst turnovers I've ever seen, where he simply turned around and was completely facing the opposite direction of our basket. Anthony Edwards took the ball from him, dunked it on the other end, and then he had another turnover that results in a dunk immediately. But for that last 5 minutes, like, Julius was hot at one point. Like, he was making everything, and I was like, all right, cool. Just take us home, Julius. It was a weird game, but we're good. Is the minute that Julius Randle, the moment that Julius Randle stopped hitting everything, it was pointed out that we weren't really running offense. Part of the reason we weren't running offense is because we were trying to set Julius up with pick and rolls with Elfrid Payton, but Ricky Rubio was going 20 feet under the screen. So you're not setting anything up for the ball handler. You're not setting anything up for the screener. You're just wasting time. We were wasting time, wasting position. And yeah, I feel like that highlights a lot of our struggles. It's not our only struggle, because in the Brooklyn game down the stretch, we struggled to score. Elfrid wasn't in. So we've had some nights where people are off and things like that, but I just think that you have to set the offense up in the best way possible. There's going to be nights where people are off, but you have to set the offense up in the best way possible so that you don't deal with that. Like the Dallas game, everybody was just off. There's nothing you can do about that. That's just an L. That L is not as bad if you don't lose that Minnesota game because you tanked the offense for the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, I just want to – I'm going to kick it over to Eli in a second, but one thing we have to say on Elfrid Payton, for the guys defending him, you're entitled to your opinion, but don't act like we're, like, cherry-picking stuff. You know, it's pretty consistent at this point. We don't hate Elf, and in fact, I wouldn't even mind him playing, as long as it's 10 to 15 minutes a game. Like, it's so obvious that's his limit with this team. It's just the way the roster's built just doesn't – play to whatever he does well. So you're not going to be, I don't know why everyone's trying to say like, oh, how do you root for or hate a guy on a team that you root for? That's not what it is. It's just pretty plain to see. And Eli, I mean, am I nuts? Or is, because I feel like we're reaching this point where some people are trying to be like really extra smart or fake woke that Elfrid Payton's this good point guard that we're not appreciating. I just do not believe that's the case at all.
Well, it's interesting because I feel like early on in the season, the people who were defending Elfrid Payton were doing it by pushing back on the idea that Quickley should start, which, you know, was a fair enough argument, even if I didn't agree with it. But like the way that you know that it's not like that's not the issue is that, like, I think for most of us, we're plenty happy with Derrick Rose starting. Like, the offense runs so much smoother when Rose is playing than when Payton is playing. So it's not like this Quickley versus Payton issue that like some people try to make it into. It's really just like look at what happens when it's just Elfrid Payton out there. And, you know, to like to what Sean was saying, and the ways that the offense bogs down, it is partly on Payton. And the other thing is, though, like, we've got basically RJ and Randall, who are really good at getting into the paint, and then just a bunch of shooters and the, you know, non-shooting centers. And what we don't have when Rose isn't getting, like, major minutes is people who can get into the paint alongside those two guys. And, like, with RJ and Randall both having career seasons from deep, obviously RJ is a young career, but still, like, major improvement, you don't always want them to be the only people who can get to the paint. Like, if Burks and Quickley and Bullock aren't red hot, then it becomes what Sean was saying. Like, when no one can hit an outside shot, there's just no option other than, like, give the ball to Julius, let him go against a double team, hope that he makes it, or, you know, pulls out some miracle pass at the last second. And when the team has really been humming is when the ball movement has been going, when they've been able to penetrate and then kick out to players who can either shoot or attack against the rotating defense. And Rose is able to do that. Like, Payton can get into the lane sometimes, but it's most like he gets his, like, more on cuts. Like, he's an off-ball player, which is ironic because no one guards him off-ball. But having Rose out there can, like, give them this, like, totally different dimension that they're just completely missing without him. He's, like, their one sort of, like, quick twitch get into the paint guy, which is ironic because he's, you know, whatever age he is with however many tendons he has left in his knees. But, like, they really need, and this is something that they've needed for a while, they need people who can, like, really use that quickness and get into the lane, because all their guys are sort of either shooters or just, like, bully ball guys. Like, Randall and RJ aren't getting by on their quickness. They're getting by because of the combination of skill and just, like, freight train strength. So Elf, he's, like, kind of, like, the worst of all the world. He doesn't have the quickness. He doesn't really have the strength. So what he brings is, like, he can occasionally get to the bucket and, you know, he's not even passing anymore. So what do you do? What do you do when your point guard can't shoot and doesn't really pass?
Yeah, there was one possession in the Brooklyn game specifically that really annoyed me. He came down and just drove right into traffic, and Clyde just chuckled, and Mike Breen was like, yeah, sometimes he takes bad shots. It's a little more than sometimes. And maybe Rose is the remedy. Q, what are your thoughts on this whole Elf thing and just the point guard in general? Because I don't think Elf is the core problem, but it's a pretty glaring problem, the starting lineup and, as from the Nets game, the closing lineup, which just the fact that he's playing Elf in closing minutes just infuriates me to no end. Even if you don't want to play Quickley, I don't know why they're not doing Burks, RJ, Randall, Bullock, and then literally anyone else.
Well, in regards to that lineup, like with RJ, Burks, Bullock, Randall, I feel like, you know, you could slide Kevin Knox in there and it would do, I just feel like at some point, because I feel like that's the issue with the offense, it's spacing. So I feel like you could really add a lot of space into that lineup and still have size because you've got RJ at the one in that lineup. If you don't want it to be Quickley, if you don't want it to be Rose, whatever, there's other alternatives though. Like, you can open the floor up and that would change a lot for us offensively. I don't understand it. Like I said, I don't want to kill Elf because even in the Brooklyn game, I didn't understand why he was inserted back into the game. I think at the point where you look down the bench at your 0-6, over 6 point guard who shrinks the floor and say, hey, get back in the game, I think that's a bad coaching decision. Now, did Elf made 2 layups? There were big layups. I thank him for making those. I can't – and I've really reached the point where I'm not – my beef is not with Elfrid Payton. Like, if this coach subs me in, I'm going to play basketball. So that's what he's doing. It just doesn't make sense, though. I think there's more creative lineups, better lineups that would be more conducive to spacing the floor and giving guys opportunities.
I mean, the fact that when he needs a bucket, he goes to Quickley at the end. He puts him in every time. So he clearly understands that Quickley is better, gives you better odds at getting a bucket than Payton does. So, like, the disconnect for me, like, what is happening in the rest of the fourth quarter where he's like, he just doesn't want those buckets? Like, he clearly knows that Quickley gives him a better chance for that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't see why you go away from the guy who you know you need a bucket from. Like you said, like, if it's 53 seconds on the clock, if it's one possession game, he's putting him in. And yes, it raises the question, okay, if you know you need this guy in the game, if you know this guy opens the floor up, if you know this guy gives you the best like opportunity to get a bucket, then why is he on the bench down the stretch? It really doesn't make any sense. Like, at some point we have to, we've been saying it for a while now, like, we're a top defense in the NBA. It's a great feeling. We're a top defense in the NBA and we're under 500. That doesn't make any sense. You have to score points. Like, basketball is offensive too. It is not, everybody's like, oh, like the people, the elf truthers and all the people who act like you can't say anything. Like, well, I'm not saying Tibbs is a horrible coach at all. I think that he is going to play himself out of coach of the year if he keeps doing this offensively, because he's done a great job. We're overachieving. We're getting the most out of guys, but it's just like, you can't be a bottom ranked offense and win. Like, you defense is great. They say it wins championships, but those teams score too. You have to put the ball in the basket.
Right. And I'm not trying to sound, I don't even know what the proper word is. The selfish doesn't make sense, but you know, I am appreciative of Thibodeau and everything he's done. Like, this roster, which is largely unchanged, stunk last year and they don't stink now. So I don't want to make it seem like I'm fed up with Tibbs, but his marriage to his rotations really just kills the team. Like, he has, like, it looks like he irons out a very clear game plan before the game and he sticks to it no matter what happens. And it comes back to bite him in the ass when, like, Obi against in the Mavs game, that drove me nuts. He had 9 quick points. The first time I've seen Obi lively during the regular season, he had the tip slam in the vicinity of Porzingis. He dunked on Porzingis in my mind. But he had 9 quick points, and then you put in Randle, who was just not feeling it that night. It was just obvious. He finished 5 for 20. He wasn't hot at any point, but he still inserted him in late in the second quarter, and the Mavs came back and then eventually took control of that game. And then even the Nets game, this is more of – me reaching a little bit, but Alec Burks just hit a step up three to tie the game. Why wouldn't you give him that last shot instead of Randle? I know Randle's your top player, but it's just like he doesn't comprehend the hot hand. And same thing with Rose. Rose coming out of the half, going into the half, was on fire. He was making everything. Then he sits most of the third because Thibodeau doesn't take his starters out until at least 4 minutes left in the third. And by that time, Rose is cold, and he didn't really do much after that. So it's just like the lack of the hot hand, and just it's just like the lack of creativity. And I think it was Q, was it you that wrote that piece on Thibodeau mixing up the lineups a little bit? It just hasn't happened. Is there a remedy to this?
Hopefully you can hear me this time.
You're coming loud and clear.
Perfect. he just hasn't mixed up anything yet, and it's just kind of frustrating. I don't know if there's an exact – way to fix it now that we're past the trade deadline, but I kind of feel like the solution is just putting Rose as the starter and then bringing Alfred off the bench. That way you're supplying the front line with at least another creator and decision maker, and then the second unit gets Peyton, who you can put next to Quigley and Burks, and Burks can operate his own offense, Quigley can create a little bit secondarily, and he can also shoot. I just don't, it's just at this point now, Tibbs is kind of stuck in his own ways with his rotation. It's just going to be tough to switch that off him.
Yeah, and the other rotation that I find just, like, completely asinine, and again, like, I'm right there with you, Mike. Like, Tibbs has been, by all accounts, just a good coach. The team is overperforming drastically what people thought they were. You know, they added a couple pieces, and they've been so much better than they were last year. So, like, he gets credit. He's done a good job turning them into, like, a functional and solid basketball team, which for a long time is a lot more than we could say about a Knicks team. But this thing that he does where he keeps RJ and Quigley, but, like, Quigley is going to stay on the bench for the most part of the end of the fourth regardless, but he keeps RJ on the bench until, like, the five-minute mark, at which time, in a bunch of these close games, like, they've lost a lead, they've lost some kind of momentum, and he brings RJ in when it feels like it's already, like, a little bit too late. He brings RJ in for the uphill fight back up the hill when they already had the momentum. And I cannot for the life of me understand why he keeps doing this. He's held, and there's times where, because there hasn't been a dead ball, it means RJ doesn't come in until, like, you know, 3 minutes and 45 seconds left in the fourth. And he doesn't seem to adjust that, and like you guys say, he's very stubborn, and he seems like he found, like, his general rotation that he wanted early on. and just has been, because I don't know if it's like someone posted in our Slack, it's like the if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But it's like, it's not broke, but it's not like it's working perfectly either. Like, things can be improved here. And his resistance to changing up anything at this point is very strange to me for a team that is 500.
Below 500. We've lost, like I love Tibbs, everything that we've all said about it. But that doesn't change. Multiple things can be true at a time. We've lost, I want to say, a multitude of games this year for rotational issues. There's been quite a few times, I would say at least 6 games this year, we did not have to lose. And that's leaving a lot of them out. I mean, like, the Minnesota game is the loudest one. The Brooklyn game the other night, there's no way you lose that game. You just can't lose that game. I'm sorry. You go into the half up 10. James Harden's not coming back. You've lost 3 straight last week. You've got a favorable schedule coming up a little bit. You can't lose that game. And back to what Mike was saying about, like, the hot hand, and what Eli was saying about when he inserts RJ, it's all so annoying because, yes, he puts RJ in with 5 minutes. In the Brooklyn game, RJ had his fair share of turnovers in the third, and that contributed to them coming back for sure. Not avoiding that, not dodging that. But in the fourth quarter, RJ was cooking. Like, RJ had it going. He looked confident. He scored 7 straight points for us at a time we needed points badly. And then we just stopped going to him. That doesn't make any sense to me. Like, that's the type of stuff that helps you lose games. It doesn't make any sense. And what Mike was saying about the Obi thing. Obi scored 9 points in, like, 5 minutes. He was, like, this is... And beyond it being a player you're developing, even if it's just today, even if we throw out everything about this kid has been struggling offensively, struggling to find his groove, and he's got a rhythm going, and now you want to build that up. No. You're just talking about today's game. He didn't touch the ball for the rest of the game, except for one possession, like, toward the end of the shot clock, where he, like, went behind the back because he was, like, you know, stuck wherever he was, and then he got subbed out right after. And it's just, like, that's a coaching failure to me. I feel like if this guy comes out here and he's on it early, like, right away, everything, energy plays. Obi was giving you everything. He was getting to the basket. He was drawing fouls. He was pulling up off the dribble, getting tip-ins. Like, he was doing everything. You have to find a way to get that guy involved. Like, we saw he got a pick-and-roll touch in the Brooklyn game, and he ended up scoring. It should have been an and-one, honestly. And I was just thinking, you know, Rose found him. It was a nice pass. And I was like, if he had more of these reps by this point, that would probably be a poster. Like, if he caught that, if he was used to catching that there off the pick, and like, there, I don't know why we keep using him from 35 feet out to bust zones or whatever, like, and to just rotate the ball and be an empty part of the offense. It doesn't make any sense. So there are small tweaks that I feel like could make us much better offensively, or if he would just lean into certain things, like lean into RJ while he's hot, lean into Obi. Even if you do feel like you want to put Randall back in, try the Randall-Obi thing for once while Obi's cooking. Like, try things. Mitch is out. Once Mitch went out, it's like, let's try some things. He's so stubborn and so rigid, and yeah, like, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But, like, it's not necessarily broke, but it could certainly use some fixing. We're one of the worst offenses in the NBA. Fix it. Try something, bro. Let's see something. And then let me see it and see it not work, and then I'll shut up. But if you're just going to keep banging your head into the wall doing the same thing and losing games the same way, it's very frustrating. Teams are zoning us.
Yeah, like, and when they go in the zone, it's like bad. Like, they're like, oh, shit, they're in zone. Fuck, we're screwed. And just to underscore the offensive struggles, they're averaging, like I said, 102.3 points per game the last 6 games. And that's with good 3-point shooting. Because shout out to Reggie Bullock, man. I mean, we gave him some shit early in the early part of the year. He's been shooting that thing. 45.9%, bro. I got to find the air horns, but 45.9%, man. To end the half in Brooklyn was – he was great. I mean, and he's been good. He even put the ball on the floor and had a lane. I was like, oh, my God, who's this? So that's happening. RJ and Randall continue to move along, and the team's still struggling to score points, and I really do think it's just lineups. I mean, Obi Toppin, even after his Dallas game, he hasn't cracked more than 15 minutes on the court. How are you going to get into any type of rhythm, let alone using him right? And – it's like we got a tease in the Brooklyn game where they finally used him in the pick and roll, and that was it. That was literally the only time they did it. So it's kind of like a balance of just like, are you not going to use this guy at all? And if not, just use Kevin Knox, because the way they're using Obi, I know, Sean, you're a big fan of this. Kevin Knox, you're using him, you're using Obi in the way you should be using Knox, who remains out of the rotation for, I don't know why, because Knox wasn't like some duck when he came in. He did what he did, and there were points where he was just really finding his home in the corner, and we haven't seen him since.
Kevin Knox has been – oh, my bad. Go ahead, Eli.
I think I'm going to say the same thing, but I was just going to say the Knox thing has been super frustrating, which is ironic considering a lot of us had all but, you know, given up on him completely last year. But it's been really frustrating. Like, he basically came out in preseason and in the first few games and showed just about everything you could want to see from him. Not like – not superstar potential, but just like good, solid NBA player potential. Like, working on defense. He's still not a good defender, but he's working on defense. He was like starting to understand a little bit more, starting to get a little bit of interesting passing. Actually had a little bit of chemistry passing to Obi, which like we could use right now because no one seems to want to pass to Obi. And like you said, like, he was just drilling shots from the corner. He's like, he's Mr. Consistency now from the corner. And like, I get it. Like, the fact that you sign a bunch of veteran wings, or like, or bring back Reggie Bullock, you know, trade for Rose, it's hard to find a spot for a young guy who's still trying to prove himself. But like, I don't know, like, we still have to be taking a long view on this team, because this team is, it's not like we're competing for championship this year. It's not like they're ready, even if they make the playoffs, they're not ready to be like a serious contending team. So there has to be some kind of thought to the future too. And like, if Knox can help you, like, Burks is probably not going to be here next year. He might. They might bring him back, and I wouldn't like hate that. Bullock probably not going to be here next year. But you know who could be here is Kevin Knox. And if you actually spend some time like turning him into a good NBA player, you might be able to like get some dividends from that. But I don't know. Like I said, it's tough with – they have a lot of competent players right now, which is a problem the Knicks are not used to having. And it means that some guys get squeezed out, and unfortunately that's Knox. But I'm hoping that as we get towards the end of the season, I don't believe it because Tibbs has sort of shown us who he is, and that is a man of habit. But I'm hoping that we can just get like a little bit more, just like just give him like a few non-garbage time reps. Like, that's all we're, you know, like give him 2 minutes at the end of that first half, you know, just like give him some time to play where it actually kind of matters a little bit.
All right. And the confusing thing with me is Tibbs seems to have a 10-man rotation for a team that doesn't have like a good, like they don't have that go-to score. Like, you can get away with a 10-man rotation if you have like Kawhi Leonard, or you like the Nets have, and even the Nets don't even play that tight of rotation, but they have three of the best isolation scores in the game. So I don't know why he's not using the full bench here. And against good teams, against Miami was another one where Miami just played right into the Knicks being stupid. I mean, Elf came in, Miami had no inclination to guard Elfrid Payton outside of the paint. They just had none. So that was already a 4-on-5. It was a 4-on-5 most of the time. So just little shit like that is going to pop up, because while you may get away with it, like they beat the shit out of the Pistons, that's great, but the Pistons aren't going to be in these play-in games, because I'm pretty confident. I mean, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn here when I say the Knicks are pretty much guaranteed to at least – participate in the play-in tournament. So you got to start thinking about postseason basketball, and that also means playing in the half court. And if it gets into the half court, it's going to be a very, very short postseason stint.
The thing about the Elfrid Payton thing and why it's so bad, honestly, is because once it becomes 4-on-5, and we love him. He does a great job. He blocks the hell out of shots. But once it becomes 4-on-5, it almost instantly becomes 3-on-5. If we're being realistic, like, Nerlens Noel is not really giving us much offensively, especially if you don't have a point guard that's setting him up. And he's dropping passes. We're not really getting a lot from him. So if the defense can already kind of leave him, once they can leave Elfrid, they can pretty much just do whatever they want. Miami did whatever they want. It was like the most well-organized, unorganized trapping I've ever seen. They knew exactly where to be because there were so many options of where to leave. And you can't give teams options to not guard in half-court sets. Yeah, that's going to kill us in the playoffs. And I think that, I don't know, the people who are opposed to these things, and I say it all the time, but the people who are opposed to these things and, you know, keep giving pushback on them, I just think that we're so used to being losers that, like, they don't even think about playoff matchups and things like that. Like, we don't, like, you have to condition yourself, like, break free from the shackles of being a loser. Like, we can win some games, and to win some games, you have to be better. Like, they're like, oh, you can't criticize players or the coach, blah, blah, blah. They know more than you. Like, bro, the Lakers be pissed. Like, Lakers fans were pissed last year. Like, and they won the championship. You're allowed to criticize players and coaches. Like, if we're not, we're under 500, bro. Like, relax. So, I don't know. But it's very frustrating.
And I just want to throw out one thing, that by the time we get to the end of the season, it's going to be interesting how we feel the dynamic of how Tibbs ran the young players, because Obi Toppin's not going to have a good enough season, I don't think, for us to say he had a good season. Kevin Knox is going to be playing under 1,000 minutes this year. And like Quiet has kept, the only three guys that we're going to be able to look to under the age of 25 that really played is Quigley, Barrett, and Mitch, and Mitch is probably going to play under 1,200 minutes due to the injury. You know, I think a lot of people are excited about the future of the Knicks, but I also kind of have some trepidation on what this team's going to do, because this team has a bunch of cap space. This team has two first-round picks. I'm not sure how much I trust Tibbs in balancing out the future and the present. You know, even if we get him the right people in free agency, does he understand that this is a long-term play? So this season's a weird season for Thibodeau and for the Knicks in general, because we didn't expect to be here, but I'm not too enthusiastic about how Tibbs has run things as of late.
Yeah, I just think he's prepared. Like, I think he's just so used to, or at least has the expectation of being a playoff team. He, like I said, he has a very outlined game plan, and he's sticking to that regardless of what happens. And sometimes it's good, because he does, I mean, he did well with doubling Kyrie towards the end of the Nets game, for example. And I mean, we're not going to pile on Alfred, but that was just comedy, where he waves off Thibodeau saying he got Kyrie one-on-one, and then Kyrie hits one right between his eyes.
No.
That was rough, man. That was like at the park where it's like, nah, I got it. When like your boys are like, yo, like he's killing you, bro. You want to switch? He's like, nah, I got it. And then he kills you for game point. It's just.
Yeah, bro. Like that's rough. And this isn't the park. This is the NBA. So that's why that play really pisses me off. Like it really makes me mad, because you let your ego get in the way of the game plan. The doubling Kyrie was work. He was killing us. Honestly, I don't even really give Alfred much fault. Like, people need to stop saying he's some stellar defender, though. But I don't give him a whole lot of fault for what Kyrie was doing. Kyrie is Kyrie. Like, he's just cooking.
Oh, he was in his bag. But he was in his bag that game.
He was in his bag. But it's like, you waved off the double when we need the double. The double is what's working. It worked on the play before that and the play after that. This is a key point in the game. And then not only did he wave off the double, but then after waving off the double, he didn't even really get a hand up. Like, Alfred does not put a hand up to that shot. He did one of his fake closeouts again. It's so annoying. It's like, you waved off the double, you have this guy one-on-one, and you didn't even get a hand up while he's on fire.
Yeah, it's just one thing before we take a break. Just his defense overall is, like you said, completely overrated, because this is early in the game, and it caught me, because it really pissed me off, because I was clipping for the net game. There was one play where Joe Harris, notorious spot-up shooter, phenomenal spot-up three-point shooter, Joe Harris, was driving to the rim. Alfred thought, let me collapse on him, even though Noel was already there, and let me leave Kyrie Irving wide open in the corner. And I'll just let you guys guess what happened after that. But on that note, we'll take a quick break.
Bang,
and
bring our 3 points. Anthony Edwards did.
It just killed me. Oh, my God.
Ugh. He lost that game for us. Like, he lost the Minnesota game. He gave up the game-winning three because people think he doubled the ball. No, he's not supposed to be there. Like, that's not how defense works. The reason the guy's open is because he's somewhere he has no business being. I'm sorry.
No. Let it out. It's built up long enough. But on that note, we'll take a quick break and meet you on the other side. All right, we're back. So, guys, I feel like a problem that's becoming more prevalent as the season moves on and these games become closer is the lack of close that the Knicks have. They just, against Minnesota, And against the Nets, there were two opportunities to win the game. RJ Barrett came up short in Minnesota to Anthony Edwards' pleasure. And then against Brooklyn, Julius Randle could not connect. And just one quick stat from my boy Matt Spendley. Julius has taken 51 shots in crunch time, and crunch time, to me at least, is less than 5 minutes. And he's shooting 37.3% on those shots. And this is far from shitting on Julius, quite the opposite. My take is Julius is too gassed, and he's playing in oftentimes in a lineup that just isn't enough spacing. And as we know, Julius's favorite thing to do now seems to be to dribble to the middle and then hit that fadeaway. That fadeaway. So I think it's a little bit of that. But Q, do you see a bigger problem here, or is it just lack of that score to do it?
I certainly think part of it is the lack of the score. I think all of us kind of want RJ to get those reps late in games. Alec Burks is someone that we mentioned as well. I wonder if the lineup balance is enough, especially in those last 5 minutes, if maybe Alec Burks over Bullock is a bit of a better option, just because Burks, when he gets the ball, there's a little bit more dynamism. He can handle, he could, you know, take it for a pull up. He can shoot the three a little bit. Just that difference. I know we want Elfrid Payton out, and I think Sean said it before, he doesn't really use Elfrid Payton as much in those late game lineups, which is right. I kind of remember Quigley coming in every once in a while for, you know, like a decoy usage late in games, but something like Quigley, Burks, Barrett, Randle, and Mitch or Noel in this scenario just makes sense to me. Just multiple ball handlers. So it's not always relying on RJ getting the ball and trying to create, Julius trying to get the ball and create. I just think there's not enough of a change up there when we get into those late possessions, not to mention Peyton most likely on the floor mucking up the spacing.
One thing I thought was interesting, I don't expect Tibbs being Tibbs to see this like for long stretches, but in that last game when they needed that shot, he went small and put Randle at the five, which is, you know, partly because Noel, I think, was in foul trouble. But I would love to see a little bit more of that, because like Randle can play the five. And he's not going to be a rim protector. We know that. But if you can get enough just like positional defense, like kind of just get your body in front of people, like if you can have like Rose, Quigley, RJ, you know, you could even put RJ at the four and put in, you know, Burks in that too, to just try to have like an all offense lineup. I don't expect to see that a lot, but like the team has more options than I think we even necessarily realize in terms of like lineup building, just because Tibbs is such an uninventive lineup guy. And like obviously that lineup I just described would hemorrhage points, but if you just need, you know, a brief spurt, like I really wish we could see something like that, where that would have such a good balance of shooting and creating and slashing. So I don't know. I like that he did that. I don't think he had a ton of options. Like there was 3 seconds left, but it'd be interesting to see if he ever goes back to that.
Eli, I have been begging for that. I've been, especially with Mitch out, it's just like, at least try it. I get that New Orleans does a great job protecting the basket. I get that Taj gives us more than you would think Taj can give us, but I would just like to see some stretches. You don't have to go to it a lot, but you know, there's, especially in certain matchups, like that's the thing about the lack of like him being inventive, because there's certain matchups where it's like, okay, the tallest player they have on the floor, I can't think of an exact team right now or an exact
Jeff
game,
Green. But it was the last against the Nets.
Yeah, like you can run Randle at the five right now, bro. Like you can get away with that for sure. And you can have the advantage in that lineup and then create spacing around him. And that's why I feel like we can play people like Kevin Knox. I feel like you can play Knox at the four. Knox has been sufficient enough defensively. It won't be, I'm not saying he's a staunch defender, but he's no longer the liability he once was. I pay a lot of attention to him when he's on the court. So it's just like, you can have that there. You can space the floor. You can try the Randle Obi thing. You can, like you just said, putting RJ at the four. I think that RJ has the frame and build against most teams. If Jeff Green is at the five, RJ can play the four. Like you can try other things and get other lineups on the floor that are more favorable to the main people, and then have, yeah, then he's in better positions. Also, at this point in late game situations, I'm kind of tired of ISOs. I feel like that's what we get every time. And not that it's wrong. I mean, Julius got a good shot. We normally get a good shot. So I can't even say I'm too tired of it. But it's like it's not really having the same effectiveness. So why don't we try to draw something up? Like somebody pointed out the play that the Hornets ran on us to beat us with Devontae Graham at the buzzer. And they were like, I'd love to see something like this drawn up for IQ. And it's just like, yeah, like that would be cool. Even if it's not IQ, if it's Burks, whatever, if you want to get a shooter, a good shot, like try something maybe off the ball and create something for somebody. I mean, I don't know. We get good at attempts, so I'm not tripping too much. But at some point, we have to see some more creativity in the lineups and in the play calls toward the end of the games because we're struggling to close.
Yeah, and in the regards to Noel, I mean, Taj has been great, and I love Taj. He's actually been a godsend because he seems to be the only guy that can give Thibodeau exactly what he needs at the center position on a consistent basis. I don't want to see Noel or even Nick Legend, Norvell, Pelle. Is it Pelle? Pelle? Anyway, I don't want to see those guys unless we're facing like Embiid or Jokic. You know, those type of centers where you can get killed down low in a crucial moment. I feel like when it's like less than 5 minutes or specifically like that like less than a minute where you really need a bucket, it's like kind of foolish to not play Randall at the five. It just doesn't make much sense. And quickly, in general, you guys say he comes in late. He barely's been coming in at all. So I don't know what goes on in Thibodeau's crazy little head, but it's he's got to clean it up.
When IQ was playing, he was one of the best fourth quarter scorers in the league for a small stretch. So just like, yeah, you might want to play the guy who spaces the floor, hits threes, and gets to the line down the stretch of games.
Right, because how many people get nervous? It's like just at the end of games, people just tense up naturally. They're more likely to foul, and Quickly is definitely the best person on this team that is capable of drawing fouls, and he's just not getting a lot of love. I don't know. Eli, I know you have a Quickly piece coming up. Is Quickly doing something to get in the doghouse that I missed? Because it doesn't look like it takes much to get in Thibodeau's, not doghouse, but, you know, staple to the bench like Frank and Kevin Knox have learned all too well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And it does seem like Quickly clearly has the shortest leash of anyone not named Obi Toppin on this team. And it's a fascinating question because, like, I wonder at times if Tibbs, with his sort of like hard nose, gritty, like you got to bleed for this game kind of style, gets annoyed at the like IQ's floaters and like his, which I think is there is some validity to the point that like Quickly is one of the best free throw shooters in the league. He came in as a rookie as one of the best free throw shooters in the league. So his complete aversion to drawing fouls is incredibly frustrating at times because he'll throw up these floaters that like go in sometimes, but like, dude, just draw a foul. Like he's so good at drawing fouls on the perimeter and so averse to it around the rim. It's kind of baffling to me. And I don't know if it's because he's overthinking it and is like, well, I'm a rookie, so I'm not going to get calls. But like, I think we've seen over the last few weeks the decision-making process not being quite what it needs to be for Quickly, which is fair. Like, that's not, like, criticism. I mean, it is criticism, but, like, he's a rookie. It's not going to be what it needs to be for a playoff team. And I tweeted about this the other night when they were playing Dallas. Like, this is a team that is now, like, a team with playoff ambition. It's not a rebuilding team anymore. I mean, it is, but as far as, like, what the coach is thinking, I'm sure how the front office is thinking about it, this is a team with playoff ambition. And it's tough to have a rookie playing major minutes on a team with playoff ambition. Then, like, the mistakes get magnified and the margin for error gets slimmer and slimmer. So I think that part of what's happening is kind of, like, natural as we get closer to the playoffs and as every game matters a little bit more. And I do think we have seen Quickly sort of, like, he's got some habits that he needs to break. Like, his aversion to shooting pull-ups in the mid-range when he gets the guy off of him, I think like he's got to be able to take those shots. And his unwillingness to just like drive hard and get a foul and go to the line, he's got to start doing that. He can't just rely on the floater every single time. But, you know, at the end of the day, like he gives them a dimension that most of the other guys don't. Like only Rose really has his sort of like ball in hand quickness to just like get into the paint. So I do wonder if like part of it is Tibbs trying to do like some tough love to be like, look, if you're not going to like get into the paint, like get 2 feet in the paint and do something, well, you're going to come out because like I need to drill these habits out of you. But at the same time, the other side, I'm just like, I just think he just like doesn't trust young guys and is like, I think he might be doing this for the wrong reasons. Like there are good reasons for him to kind of like have a slightly shorter leash or to be trying to like teach quickly, but I'm not confident that he's doing it for those right reasons.
My thing that's been so frustrating with the whole IQ thing is I feel like everybody holds the rookie more accountable than anybody else. Like, I think that, yeah, you got to hold the rookie accountable, but the vets also have to be held to that same accountability. So certain things, like, yes, there's been some poor decisions made. His shot isn't falling the same way. So, like, I haven't even been as loud about, yo, he needs more minutes. I do believe he needs more minutes, but I understand that right now if he's not being as productive, you don't play him as much. But I just think that we're better as a team when he's on the floor. The ball rotates more easily. As you said, not many people have his ball in hand quickness, even if he doesn't go all the way to the basket. Just the way that the defense has to react when he's on the floor, when the ball swings to him, when the ball swings from him, I feel like it opens us up and helps us as an offense. And I also, like, Breen and Clyde were, like, talking about him like he was a defensive liability, and it was really frustrating me because, like I said, I watch these games on my MacBook so I can focus very closely, and I watch Emmanuel Quickly a lot defensively because people do try to make, when it was like the Elf versus IQ thing, they would try to make him seem like he's a bad defender. Is he small? Yes. Does he sometimes get overpowered? For sure. But is he, they were like, oh, he gambles for steals and is often out of position. That's not true. And actually, that's more true of the guy they never say it about. Alfred Payton got sprayed on for a game winner by being out of position, and they never pointed out that he was out of position. But IQ switched on to Joe Harris while he was driving and was with him step for step, and then Joe Harris scored through and over him, and they started talking about what a defensive liability he was. And I just think that that kind of perception is, like, really strange, and I think that's part of what plays in with Tibbs, too. Like, he – I don't know. But, yeah, he. I don't think he's – like, yeah, it's tough with a rookie, but I also believe he makes the team better.
I'm fully convinced MSG has sent Clyde, Breen, Wally, Alan Hahn talking points to say, hey, make sure you make Elf look good. Because some of the stuff they say is just like, what the fuck are you watching? Like, anytime the Knicks won, and Wally likes to use that stat, the Knicks are blank blank when Elf has more than 5 assists. It's like, nice, bro. That's like, you just named like 6 games out of fucking 40. He's just, stop. It's just, you see what this guy does to me, guys? He just really he really pushes the buttons, man. But yeah, he's got to play in the closing lineup or Burks, man. And this kind of just ties back to what we talked about at the top. Use the hot hand. Like, even if you don't have a fully set closing lineup, like, we always know RJ and Randall are going to be there. If somebody's hot, just play them. Just do it. I don't know why this is so hard.
No, I certainly agree with Quigley. I certainly wish he played more because I feel like I still have questions on him. And it's not, is he a player type questions. It's just, what is he in the grand scheme of the Knicks? You know, I think if the Knicks are going to take steps forward next offseason and try to make moves, I would like a little bit more certainty that Quigley can handle the backup point guard role. So to not put him in there and give him more minutes, it leaves the door open for the question to still be there, if that makes sense. You know, and him with RJ and Randall, I think it's like a good trio. I think they're about, the net rating's about 8-9 points. Last time I checked it, I think I checked it yesterday. Mm-hmm. Like, that trio is a good baseline for what the Knicks need to work on. Obviously, you can add another shooter and another rim and a rim protector behind them, but he's someone who really needs to start playing more. And I feel like the fan base kind of has to push for it. And at least a little bit of the media as well, because he answers a lot of questions for what the Knicks need.
Yeah, there's just no player in the last few years that just forces the defense to pay attention to him that far out. Most of the Knicks in recent years post Melo, you've kind of been able to like hover below the 3-point line and not really have to worry about closing out. Quickly changes that. And I don't know, every time we're talking about it, it's becoming a topic. I'm just thinking of Karl Towns saying Thibodeau wasn't good for young players, and I'm starting to understand what he means. I don't think he meant it as the slight as Tibbs being a bad coach. I just think Tibbs has a certain expectation or certain, I don't know, maybe he just looks at rookies differently than he looks at veterans. It's just something about him, that the way he's wired, just favors veterans. It's pretty obvious. But he's gonna have to button it up. There's 21 games left. Any win or any loss drastically shifts playoff positioning, and I believe right now they're in the 7th seed, and they face Boston tonight. So you lose that game, now you're at the 8th seed, or you could tick into the 9-10 seed where you're pretty much on the skirts and close to the lottery. So it's really got something that really has to get buttoned up.
I'd like to see more of it. You would think that you'd have him run those backup point guard minutes. Like Quentin said, you got to start seeing things. You know, yes, we're here this year, but you do have to see things beyond this year. Like Eli was saying, we're not, you know, a championship contender. So you have to go. This is a big off season. We have a lot of cap space. We have 2 first-round picks. Like, that's more young guys to come throw in now and not be sure. Like, you know, you got to know what you're doing. Like, and I just, especially, it'd be one thing if it went against what's good for the team. But I think that both with this IQ thing, also with, you know, Obi, when he scores 9 points, getting the ball again, Kevin Knox getting some minutes when he's shooting the lights out and showing improvement in the areas that you need him to show improvement in, and you can also move Randall over to the 5 and space the floor out. Like, I think that can help you today and tomorrow. And that's why it's annoying when it feels like he's stuck in yesterday.
Yeah, I feel confident quickly can at least be at the bare minimum. I feel like the Lou Williams type of role where he doesn't necessarily start the game, but he's closing it, is perfectly fine. And maybe in the offseason, you add a Gary Trent Jr., who I think would be phenomenal sub for Reggie Bullock. Reggie could stick along. I'm just saying, you put Gary Trent as your starting small forward instead of Reggie Bullock, that's, you're starting to look really good. Or maybe you add one of the point guards in the draft. I mean, package those picks, try and get a Jalen Suggs or get, I'm trying to think of another good point guard. Eli, help me out. Who's a
Jaden Springer?
Jaden Springer. Well, I don't even think we need to trade up, but you get the point. There are ways that I feel like we've ironed out at least 3 or 4 positions that are locked down. RJ, Randall, Mitch, and then Quickly. We know Quickly is going to fit in somewhere in the top 5 or 6 players. So I think we're in a good space, but it's until we get there, I think it's time to, like, first of all, open up that rotation and then, you know, start. Don't be afraid to be bold because, like Sean said, this is not a championship team. Making the playoffs is already a championship within itself.
I would give all the Dragon Balls for Jalen Suggs to be a Nick.
It's the only thing I could think of. That's the first name that came to mind. I know he's wildly out of range, but I mean, I think he could go a little down towards, like, Eli, do you think he could slip to like 4? Probably not, right?
I think he could slip to 4 because I personally think it's like a coin flip for him and Jalen Green. I just don't buy – I think that it's very unlikely that any of the top 4 picks are going to be traded. But, I mean, the thing is, like, I think that there are plenty – like, Springer, for example, is a guy I think could go 5th, could go, like, 15th and be in the Knicks range. And I think that he's, like, really awesome. I think same thing with Sharif Cooper. Same thing with, like, Trey Mann, I think, is a guy that you can get, like, in the Knicks range who – could genuinely, like, I think he's super underrated, could be an awesome player. Like, there's going to be interesting point guard prospects, and I think there will be a chance, but I do think that, like, a lot of the guys you'd be trading up for would probably be more, like, wing types if you're going to trade up into the top 10.
Yeah, I mean, I still think that's their number one need, the wing depth, but the overarching point is I feel like we finally have a set plan moving forward, and maybe – there was a report that Kawhi Leonard's definitely signing with the Clippers, which I don't know why that was a report. The fact that it was a report is a little conspiracy radar to me, because why is that even news? But, you know, yep. You never know when a star becomes available. And Nick Scalero actually wrote a piece today about landing that star player. I really think that's the end all here. I think that's when you could really start thinking about doing something in the postseason rather than just being happy to be there.
Here to hear
I'll
first.
Believe Kawhi isn't. Oh, sorry. I was just. I'll believe Kawhi isn't going to Miami for no reason other than my own, you know, theories when I see it, and not a moment before. That's all I'm saying.
If they don't make it to the Western Conference Finals, he is not re-signing and shit. I don't know. I don't care what they say.
Agreed.
I just think he would go to the Lakers over. I don't know. Just coming back east. I don't know. That'd be a little weird.
Come be a Knick.
It's perfect. I mean, I don't care if I'm being a little biased fan, Nick boy here. That's literally a perfect fit. You put him into that starting lineup, I really don't see any downside to that for Kawhi. Like, that's everything he needs is there. But, yes. Now, go ahead.
No, I was just agreeing with you. It would really be a perfect fit. Like, RJ is way next to him, getting better and better every year. Randall as a great number two all-star. Mitch being defensive enforcer.
See, I think they would trade RJ in that scenario, though.
Really?
Yeah, I feel like if you go after Kawhi, the play is the same thing that the Clippers did. And it's you sign Kawhi and you trade to go get Bradley Beal. And you put RJ in the deal. You put RJ in the deal and you try to lessen the blow on the assets you're giving up. That way you're not exactly where the Clippers are, but I don't think Kawhi is joining in the scenario where Randall's his number two. I think Randall is the number three is fine, but I feel like you do that. I think you would push for Kawhi to come back and you make the Beal trade shortly after just to make sure he's happy.
I don't even want Kawhi now. I don't even want him now.
Yeah, I'm not trading RJ. Really not, though.
Man, did you guys get mad? And Randall, though, that would be –
That'd be too good to be true. But before you got out, that reminded me, did you guys have any reaction to RJ Barrett not being, I think it was the top 25, under 25? Because I saw Colin Sexton's name there. I'm just like, sounds like a lot of cap. I saw a couple other names. I was just like, this is a little wild. Did you guys have any reaction to that?
No, my only reaction was, like, he's just going to keep getting undervalued until he makes it impossible for them to stop. So I'm just like, you know what, just add another little layer to that chip on his shoulder. I'm good with that. He'll just, like, keep getting it higher and higher and keep being, like, the maniacal worker he is. And I think, you know, in a weird way, it might end up being the best thing for him.
Yep. And, like, even seeing the way that he responded to the Anthony Edwards thing where he literally just put a laughing emoji and he was just like, yeah, I just laughed. I think RJ is, like, kind of a maniac a little bit.
Like, yeah, I think Edwards is kidding. Like, Edwards, if no one's familiar with Edwards, Edwards is very funny. I think he was just talking shit, like, regular. I don't think he was being serious, but I definitely do think RJ was like, all right, bet, like, I'm going to see you soon. Like,
yeah, like, RJ, I think RJ is a little bit of a maniac. Like, even when they asked him in the preseason, like, how he felt about being left off the all-rookie team, like, most guys would be like, oh, you know, it didn't matter. He was like, no, definitely. Chip on my shoulder for sure. Like, he loves that. He lives for that. So, you know, they left Ja Morant off. They left Trae Young off. They left that was just a horrible list, honestly, in general.
Wait, Ja didn't make the list?
Ja didn't make the list either. Or maybe he did, but he quoted it in saying something. Like, I don't think he was on
If you quote tweet it, you're tight. Like, you're not quotating. Like,
yeah,
you
made the list.
It's ESPN, so I take it with a grain of salt. They just don't like the Knicks for whatever reason because they know we're gonna do exactly what I just did.
They just want us to talk about it. Yep.
It's whatever.
Like, Tatum was, like, the fifth on that list. I was just – I looked at it. I saw the RJ – people was sad about RJ. I didn't even read it. I was going to read it later, but, yeah, I don't get it.
Tatum's definitely number one.
Anthony Edwards not knowing Elfrid Payton's name is
– was hilarious.
Hilarious.
Yeah, what did he say? He said number six – leave number six
number
alone.
Number six, who's that guy?
That's – I mean, how can you not love Anthony Edwards? That's just perfect. But before we get out of here – Knicks play at the Celtics. We're recording this on a Wednesday. The Knicks play the Celtics tonight, followed by the Grizzlies and Raptors at MSG. And the Lakers are coming on Monday night. ESPN dropped that game since every one of the Lakers is injured. They started marketing Dennis Schroeder, so they finally pulled the plug on the Lakers on national TV. But those are the next three games coming up. Knicks got to win some games, guys, because, like I said, 2-4 in their last six. Hitting that home stretch, you kind of want to get higher up that Eastern Conference playoff picture, which is very possible. Because, like I said, one win can shoot you up from 7-4. So hopefully.
And Boston's right on their heels at that eighth seed.
That's right. I don't know what's up with Boston, but hey, I hope we beat the shit out of them in Boston again. That'd be really great at the other Garden. So I'll tune in. Q, you have any articles coming up?
I do not. We got to figure some stuff out in the near future, but yeah, I don't have anything coming up. We got some good stuff coming up though. Just yeah. Talking to some writers.
Now check it out. KnicksWall.com. Jason Buford, I believe, should be making his debut shortly. So be on the lookout for that. On that note, we will talk to you guys next time.